Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Nun Chet Amud Bet, two lines from the bottom. The Gemara here is discussing the Mishnah that we brought from Tamid, which Rabbi Zered attempted to bring from that a proof to Rabbi Yochanan's statement that Rabbi Yossi believes that Mizbeach Chulet it's a phone. And that is because we had that Mishnah that was also modified or qualified by a Braita in which Rabbi Yossi gave a Siman. And from that, Rabbi Zered wanted to conclude that Rabbi Yossi holds Kulim Mizbeach it's a phone. And he's the author of that position in the Mishnah in Tamid that says that the second pyre was found for a moat off of the southwestern corner of the Mizbeach. From that, he can then find a Tanaic proof to the fact that Rabbi Yochanan's statement about Rabbi Yossi's position is correct, that Kulim is Beach Mitzafon. Yesterday, we rejected that by saying that it's possibly Rabbi Yehuda is the author of that Mishnah in Tamid, and that Rabbi Yehuda, who believes Mimutza, that the Mizbeach was actually centered in the Azara, nevertheless, the four amot was not literally four amot from the southwestern corner, it was really six amot from the southwestern corner. If you looked at the ulam as being the same as the heichal, there you have a 20 amot doorway that is open, 20 amot doorway that's open, one of 32 amot mizbeach, so you have 12 amot left, six on each side, and then on the southwestern side, the six amot, we left out the amai yisod and amai soviv, that got you the four amot, and in that way we could explain that Mishnah in Tamid without it being Kulei Mizbeach B'Tzafon, without it being authored by Rabbi Yossi, and we lose the proof that Rabbi Zera was looking for. The Gemara here will give an additional possibility as to who the author of the Mishnah in Tamid is, and again, that would dismiss Rabbi Zera's proof that it was Rabbi Yossi. Which is Rabbi Shravi Amar, Hamani, Rabbi Yossi Aglilihi. The author of that Mishnah in Tamid is Rabbi Yossi Aglili, the Tanya, Rabbi Yossi Gliomer, Tok Shnemar. The pasuk says, "V'natata tekior ben umeid uben amizbeach." So it says that the placement of the kior is between the umeid ben amizbeach. Or again, here another pasuk there in Parshat Pekudei is "V'yasem et kior ben umeid uben amizbeach," which is that the kior sits between the mizbeach and umeid, which is in the mishkan, is what the real mishkan is. It's the kroshim, the area of the heichal. In the Beit Hamikdash, that would mean that it sits between the Heichal or the Ulam and the Mizbeach. But then you also have the Pasuk over there that tells you the positioning of the Mizbeach, which is that Mizbach HaOla, you have to be Sam Petach Mishkan Omoe. They place that at the entranceway to the Omoe. So here you have the location of the Mizbeach, the location of the Kiyor. And there's a problem now because you have a Kior that is demanded to be between the Ulam and the Mizbeach. And then you also have a Pasuk telling you that the Mizbeach is in front of the Petach Omoed, which would preclude you from placing the Kior in between the Mizbeach and the Omoed. So that's what the Diok is. Mizbeach bepetach Omoed, below Kior bepetach Omoed. The Mizbeach can be situated in front of the opening to the Omoed, but the Kior cannot be there. So hey, can I not know? So then where is the placement of the Kior? Ben Ulam the Mizbeach, it's between the Ulam and the Mizbeach, Mashuch Kima'a Klapei Adarom, pulled a little bit southwards. So in essence, what it's saying is that it's not literally between the Mizbeach and the Ulam, it sits in that space that would have been between the Mizbeach and the Ulam, had the Mizbeach been in that location. But it's pulled south of the Mizbeach, so it is between the Ulam and the Mizbeach, but not literally in the direct line between the Ulam and the Mizbeach. It says, Maikasova! What was he thinking? Why does he have to pull it to the south? Why can't he get it between the Ulam and the Mizbeach? Says, Ikasavar, if he believes, Kule Mizbeach Bidarom, that the entire Mizbeach is situated on the southern side of the Azara, that means from the midpoint line of the Azara, south is the Mizbeach, Nukme Mikotel Heichal Ulidarom, Ben Ulam Mizbeach. Then you can put it from the Kotel of the Heichal to the south. So again, we'll do the calculations quickly. The Petach HaEichal is 10 amot wide. If the Mizbeach itself is situated all the way to the south, that means it's got half of the Petach HaEichal there, because it's sitting on the midline south. That means 5 amot of the Petach HaEichal are opposite the Mizbeach. So in those 5 amot, you can't place the Kior, because that would block the Mizbeach from being Petach HaMoed. On the other hand, for the remaining 27 amot of the Mizbeach, Mizbeach's 32 minus 5 is 27 amot, place the Kior right there, and we don't have a problem. It would be Ben Ulam of Mizbeach, and it wouldn't interrupt the Petach HaMoed. So you have an easy place to place the Kior. Why does he have any problem placing the Kior? Why does he have to move it south of the Mizbeach? He could have put it opposite the Mizbeach. Even if he holds Kedusha Teichal Bulam Chadoi, if he believes that the Kedusha of the Eichal and the Kedusha of the Ulam are the same Kedusha, which means that the doorway to the Ulam, remember, is 20 amot wide. That means that for the first 10 amot of the doorway, it's covering the Mizbeach. And that would mean that the Mizbeach has to be clear in that first 10 amot between the midline of the Azara to 10 amot into the Mizbeach would be in front of the Petach HaUlam. But that still means for a 32 amah Mizbeach, 32 minus 10 means you have 22 amot here where you could place the kior ben ulam mizbeach and not interrupt ben mizbeach the petach omoed. So nukma mikoto ulam ledarom ben ulam the mizbeach. So then why do you need to push it south of the mizbeach? Right? Inami kasavar chetzio b'tzafon v'chetzio b'darom. What happens if Rabbi Yosef Halili believes that the mizbeach is situated centered in the azara? So then you have Nukma, Mikote Echal, Uledarom, Ben Ulam, the Mizbeach. Once again, there's sufficient space to the south to do this. The Petach HaEchal is 10 amot wide. That means the 10 center amot of the Mizbeach have to be cleared where you can't put the Kior because it can't be Petach HaMoed. But again, if you take 32 minus 10, that's 22 amot left. Split it half on each side. That means 11 amot past the area of the Petach HaEchal to the south and to the north. In those 11 amot to the south, you could have put the kior there. It would have been ben ulam la mizbeach, and not interrupted ben la mizbeach la petach omoed. If you believe that the kedushat ulam and the kedushat heichal are all one kedusha, that means now that you have an area that's 20 amot wide, where you're going to be opposite the mizbeach, and you can't place the kior because that would interrupt the petach omoed. Again, if you take 32 amot in the Mizbeach, minus 20 amot wide, where the Petach Ulam exists, where you can't put the Kior, that leaves you 12 amot, 6 amot to the south, 6 amot to the north. You still have 6 amot to the south of the Petach HaUlam. Nukma mikot ulam uledarom, ben ulam ulmizbeach. You could place it over here without having to be south of the Mizbeach and still accomplish both psukim. El alam mishum the kasavar, Rabbi Yosef Lili must believe, kulei Mizbeach bitzafon. The entire Mizbeach is placed on the northern side of the Azara. So now, Ki nimi mukwe la mikoto heichal uletzafon habalei ben ulam ulemizbeach. He says, wait a minute. If that's the case, why don't you just place it on the northern side? It's true that the Mizbeach now is sitting north of the midline of the Azara. So that means if you believe that Petah Heichal, there's five amot there that it's up against the Mizbeach, but that again means 32 minus 5 is 27 amot left. That means to the northern side of the Mizbeach, there's 27 amot where it's not Petach Eichal, but it's still Ben Ulam the Mizbeach. And you can just put the Kior right there. Or, Inami, if you think that Kedushat Eichal V'Ulam Chadahi, and therefore you have to have 20 amot wide where it's clear because of the Petach Ulam, then you still have the Petach Ulam, which is 20 amot wide. It means 10 amot of the Petach Ulam are in the Mizbeach. 32 minus 10 is 22. There's still 22 amot left between the Mizbeach and the Ulam. So then you can place it. And then you can place it in that 22 amot space. So no matter which way you set up the Mizbeach, that's whether you set it up all to the south, or you set it up on the midline of the Azara, or you set it up all to the Tzafon, there is a way to get the Kior Ben Ulam the Mizbeach. And so why is Rabbi Yosef Lili saying that you have to pull it south of the Mizbeach? The answer is, Amar Kra Tzafona, Shehei Tzafon Panui Mikelim. Rashi claims it's the extra hey in the word Tzafona, which we have, Al Yerach HaMizbeach Tzafona, that's where you have to do the Korban Ola, but that Shechita, which is then Al Yerach HaMizbeach Tzafona, Rashi says it could have said Al Yerach HaMizbeach Tzafon. The fact that it said Tzafona means to indicate that Tzafon Panui Mikelim. It should be cleared of anything else. So that's what the extra hey says. Or the other possibility is, Ayerach Mizbeach Tzafona seems to indicate as long as you keep going north, you're legal to do Shechita. You're not going to bump into anything that stops you from doing Shechita. And so therefore you would have to have these areas cleared in order for it to be that it's in the Tzafon. Others say that it's correlated with the Shachat Oto, Ayerach Mizbeach Tzafona Asher Lifnei Hashem. And that is the Tzafona Lifnei Hashem. The Tzafon should be Lifnei Hashem and nothing else Lifnei Hashem. But the way the Baalei Tosafot learn it is that Ayerach Mizbeach Tzafona, that only the Mizbeach can be in the Tzafon or adjacent to that tzafon, nothing else can be in the tzafon. But in that way, you cannot now solve the problem by placing the kior on the north side between the mizbeach and the ulam. That would then prevent you from putting the kior there. And therefore, your only solution is to place the kior slightly south of the mizbeach. Because in that way, the kior is bein ulam ubein mizbeach, but it's not interrupting between the mizbeach and the petach ulam. So that's how you get the kior to work, because you can't place it in this area, which would have been a solution, but you can't do that because the tzafon has to be panui mikelim. You can't have anything in the north besides the mizbeach. That's the other way to learn it. Ayach mizbeach tzafona, that the mizbeach is in the tzafon, but nothing else is in the tzafon. So that's the other limo there to tell you that that's the only thing in the north. So now, Tosafot points out, if you look in the Mishnayot, that there were plenty of things north of the mizbeach. We'll spend time on that later on in the Masechta and later on in Kodashim. But you have the rings and the shulchanot and all the things that are north of mizbeach. You say it has to be panui mikelim. How is it that you have all these utensils, all these other items that are north of the mizbeach? So he says that the reason that he wants the northern side clear is so that you can do the shchita in that area. Well, if these items, which are the items that are found north of Mizbeach, are part of the processing of the shchita and of the animal, they're not considered to be problematic in terms of the tzafon. The other point that he makes is, Mizbeach of the Beit HaMikdash was a Mizbeach of Binyan. So therefore you could say that the north should be clear of Kelim, but the Mizbeach can be in the north. On the other hand, and we did with the Mishkan, in the Mishkan, the Mizbeach and the Choshet was a Kli. It wasn't a Binyan, it was a Kli. The Tosfot says, how could it be that in the Mishkan, that they had the Mizbeach and the Choshet on the northern side, if it has to be clear of Kelim on the northern side? How can you allow the Mizbeach to be on the northern side? So what the Balei Tosfot answer, and this is the Tzafona, a Mizbeach Koi. This is the limit of Tosfot, which again, we noted just before, when it says, Ayerach HaMizbeach Tzafona, Tzafona means that the Mizbeach is in the Tzafon. It's qualifying Mizbeach. Mizbeach is in the Tzafon. Nothing else is in the Tzafon. And therefore, it gives you the right to place the Mizbeach in the Tzafon, even though the Mizbeach itself is a Keli, and you can't place Kelim in the northern side. But because it's defining the Mizbeach as being in the north, that's what makes it that the Mizbeach HaNechoshet could be in the north. Mantana de Poligalei to Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Who's the Tana that argues on Rabbi Yossi Aglili? What we've established now is Rabbi Yossi Aglili clearly believes that the Mizbeach is in the Tzafon. Therefore, he could be the author of that Mishnah in Tamid. And we could explain the Mishnah in Tamid, why you need the pyre to be 4 amot off the southwestern corner, is because the Mizbeach is kulay b'tzafon. In order for it to be in front of the Petach HaEichal, which is all of 5 amot, opposite the Mizbeach, then you'd have to shift it no more than 4 amot away from the southwestern corner. And that would be the explanation of Mishnah Tamid. Now we're given two options as to who could be the author of that Mishnah Tamid. It could be Rabbi Yossi Aglili, or it could be Rabbi Yehuda. In either case, it doesn't have to be Rabbi Yossi. So we don't know what Rabbi Yossi's position is, but we certainly don't have a proof from that Mishnah Tamid as to what Rabbi Yossi's position is, and therefore you can't prove or have a Tanaic proof to what Rabbi Yochanan said about Rabbi Yossi's position that Mizbeach Kulei B'Tzafon. We also discuss two positions. We discuss the position of Rabbi Yossi Aglili, which is Be'ach Kulo B'Tzafon, and we discuss the position of Rabbi Yehuda, which is its Mimutza. It is centered in the Azara. So the Gemara says, who's the Tana that argues on Rabbi Yossi Aglili, which gives us the third possible position, which is Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakovi. The Tana Rabbi Lezer Yaakovi made Tzafona. He learns the word Tzafona, she Tzafon panoi miklum. The Tzafon has to be cleared of anything, ba'filu mina mizbeach. So the Tzafon has to be totally clear, not only of Kelim, but clear of the Mizbeach as well. And for him, he has the Mizbeach entirely in the south. So that way you get three different positions. You have Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov saying it's entirely in the south. Yossi Aglili saying that it's entirely in the north. They have Rabbi Yehuda saying it's Mimutza, that it's in the middle. I sent that last night. You can take a look at it at your leisure. But here, there are roughly here 9 different positions as to where the positioning of the Mizbeach was. You have that Mizbeach Kulei B'Tzafon. If you remember, we saw Rashi back on Daf Nun Gimel, the Rashi brought 2 shitot about what it meant, Mizbeach Kulei B'Tzafon. One shita was that it was over the line, the center line. There was another shita that it was actually north of the actual Petach HaEichal, and that only the Yesod on that southwestern corner was in front of the Petach HaEichal. And then we have a position that's brought by the Rabbeinu Hananel in Yoma, which is Mizbeach Hezrubei B'Tzafon. Majority of that was in the Tzafon, which is a very difficult position. Then you have Mizbeach Mimutza, which is pretty straightforward, that it's centered there. And then you have a position that Mizbeach Rubei B'Darom. In the position of Mizbeach Rubei B'Darom, there are actually four different views within the Rishonim as to what that means, Mizbeach Rubei B'Darom. Two Shita within Rashi. And then you have the Shita of Rabbeinu Yitzchak Rabbi Yehuda, and then the Shita of Rabbeinu Hananel. Exactly what that means, Rubei B'Darom. And then we have what we saw today, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov means Mizbeach Kulei B'Darom. It's entirely in the Darom. So here, you can take a look at all the different positions that derive both from our Gemara here, as well as the Gemara in Yoma, as to all the different possibilities as to where the Mizbeach was situated. Here we give the three basic positions, which is Kulei B'Tzafon, Kulei B'Darom, and Mimutza. So now we start on a new topic. We have a statement from Rav, which is, Amar Rav, Mizbeach Shenifgam, Kol HaKodeshim Shenishkaltu Sham Psulim. A Mizbeach that is damaged. Any Kodeshim that you sheft while the Mizbeach is damaged are problematic and become Patsul. Mizbeach being Nifgam, we'll discuss about later in the Masechta as to what it means that the Mizbeach is Nifgam. Let's just assume now that either there's a scratch or something wrong with one of the stones that's there, or there's a block of the cement that is missing. Whatever that is that causes that Pegam. The Gemara in Mishnah and Sukkah speaks about when they were throwing the etrogim to stone the Kohen who did the water libations like the Tzdukim instead of like the Prushim, that they were Nifgam HaMizbeach, the Mizbeach was damaged by that. And that damage, as Rav notes over here, causes you a problem that the Korbanot going forward from that point in time are going to Psulim, of course, until you fix the Pegam and the Mizbeach. Seemingly, the deficit is the fact that you can't do Zrikat Adam. I mean, that doesn't problem the Shechita. The Shechita is fine. The problem is that when you shech the animal, you can't do Zrikat Adam because Mizbeach is Nifgam, and Mizbeach that's Nifgam is not called the Mizbeach. And that would mean that the Psul is after they did the Shechita. The Shechita was done before Nifgam and Mizbeach. Then Nifgam and Mizbeach, the problem is that you can't do the Zrikat Adam. And so even in post-Shechita, if the Mizbeach is Nifgam, you have a problem. So the failure here is that you've shechted an animal which now cannot be processed on the Mizbeach. And even if you fix the Mizbeach later on, as we're going to see in a minute, there's dichoy. That once an animal is disqualified, it can't be re-qualified again. And that's the problem. That's one possible explanation. It seems probably the easiest explanation. Although, from the statement of Rav, the Lashon of Rav, it's Mizbeach Shenifgam Kol HaKodeshim Shenishchatu Sham Psulim. As Rashi seems to be saying that the problem is the Shechita itself, based on Shenishchatu Sham, and the way he interprets it, the Shechita itself is Pasul. Not that there's anything inherently wrong with the Shechita, but Shechita, when the Mizbeach is Nifgam, is a not proper Shechita, and that's the failure here in the Kodoshim. And for that reason, the problem is that the Mizbeach is Nifgam at the time of Shechita. That's what causes the Psul. Not only when it's Nifgam afterwards and it affects the Zrikat Adam, but even it's Nifgam at the time of Shechita, that in and of itself is problematic, and that's where the Psul happens at the moment of Shechita. And that would be uniquely associated with the Shechita, because as far as the Zrikat Adam is concerned, this would qualify as Dikhoi Meikara, and therefore would not be problematic in terms of the Zrikat Adam. The problem is in the Shechita itself, and therefore, according to those individuals, it would have to be Nifgam at the time of Shechita. One of those two reasons, there's a failure here, according to Rav, when the Mizbeach is Nifgam. Mikra hu biyadeinu. Rav's statement comes from a pasuk, b'shachanu, but we forgot the pasuk. So that's similar Gemara in Avodah Zarah, but we know halacha, we know it's based off a pasuk, we're just missing the source, we don't know where that pasuk is. Kisalik v'kanam, when Kanam went to Eretz Yisrael, Ashkei the Rabbi Shimon v'Rabbi, he found Rabbi Shimon Rabbi the Kamar, Mishum Rabbi Shmuel v'Rabbi Yossi, how do you know that a Mizbeach that is Nifgam, any Korban that is shechted during that period of time is Pasul? Shenamar, the Pasuk that we quoted yesterday from Shmuel Perichov about Mizbach Adama, it says about the Mizbach Adama, Mizavacha Lavet Olotecha Ve'et Shelamecha, that you're allowed to do a Zvicha, you're allowed to shecht your Korbanot on the Mizbeach. V'chi Alavet Azoveach? Are you doing Shechita on the Mizbeach itself? Ela kashehu shalem, v'lo shehu chaser. So zavachta alav doesn't mean on it literally. As Rashi says, vayalav bigino ubishvilo kamar. It is the facilitator to allow you to do the shechita. And so the mizbeach needs to be shalem in order for you to do the shechita. Amar, Rav Kana said to himself, hainukra, tishtamet le the Rav. That's the pasuk that Rav forgot. And now I'm going to have to bring it back to him and remind him of what the pasuk was. Bali Tosfot what it say over here. What do you mean, zavachta alav, that you don't do it on top of the mizbeach? We brought this pasuk yesterday to say exactly that. That one is permitted to do shechita on the mizbeach. That was the machloket that we saw yesterday about whether you could do it on the entire mizbeach or only on the northern side of the mizbeach. But that was zavachta alav. Now you tell me, oh, you can't shecht on the mizbeach, but this zavachta alav is coming to teach you something else. What do you mean? That's exactly what we learned from it yesterday, that you're allowed to shecht on the mizbeach. So the Bali Tosfot suggests over here, avagav delel dashin alav mamash, hacha dayek mishum de zavachta alav, so what he says is there's a difference between what we learned yesterday and what we learned today. Yesterday we learned the permissibility of doing it on the Mizbeach. That means that if you do it on the Mizbeach, we're not going to stop you. We're not going to say it's pasul. But that doesn't indicate that you should do it on the Mizbeach. What the Gemara is asking today is, from the pasuk it sounds like you should be doing the Zvicha, you should be doing the Shvichita on the top of the Mizbeach. And that's what perplexes the Gemara, which is, why would it be a mitzvah to do the Shechita on the Mizbeach? I understand that maybe you have permission. If you do do it, it's not pasul. But to say that it's a mitzvah doesn't make any sense. And therefore, I have to interpret it or reinterpret it to mean something else, which means that the Zvicha is dependent on the Mizbeach. The Mizbeach being Shalem, in order for us to process the Korbanot, to have the Shechitat HaKorbanot. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Echad Zeh Echad Zeh Psulim. Rabbi Yochanan, without really explaining, says they're both pasul. The machloket, as the Gemara is going to know now, is by my pligay. Rav Savar Bali Chaim Eina Nidachim. Animals that are alive, that are kodesh, cannot be disqualified. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan Savar Bali Chaim Nidachim. Rabbi Yochanan believes that Bali Chaim can be Nidachim. What the agreement between them is, if you have a Beimah Shchuta, an animal that's already shechted, a korban, if it becomes disqualified in any period of time, then it's what's called Nidcheh. It's pushed out. Disqualified, it will then be invalid and it cannot be requalified. So if after Shechita, the Mizbeach is Nifgam, then at that point you can't rectify the Mizbeach and bring the Korban back. The Korban lost its ability to be brought during that period of time that it was Nifgam, whether it was at the time of the Shechita or at post-Shechita, because that's a Shechuta Be'ema, it's ready to go on the Mizbeach, it got disqualified or became invalid because of what was going on with the Mizbeach, then when the Mizbeach is fixed, it's Nifgam and you can't bring it. That Rav agrees to, and Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan adds on top of that, that before you shecht the animal, if you were maktish an animal, and the Mizbeach was nifgam, that ruins the animal. It's nitcheh. There was a point in time where this animal could not be brought into the Mikdash and processed because the Mizbeach is not functioning. Since the Mizbeach is not functioning, since there was a period of time where it was disqualified, it no longer can be validated or brought on the Mizbeach, and that's dichui for Balei Chaim. That is a machloka between Rav and Rav Yochanan as to whether Balei Chaim, when animals are still alive in Kodesh, can they be disqualified from the Mizbeach permanently? Is it like a Mum Over? A Mum Over is a case where it has a blemish, and that blemish can be rectified. I mean, it's something that passes, and then it'll be fixed. While the animal has the Mum, you can't bring it on the Mizbeach. Once the Mum passes, you can bring it on the Mizbeach. That's how Rav views the problem of the Mizbeach. Similar concept, that the problem is temporary. Once you fix the problem, then you can bring the korban again, just like a mum over. Yochanan says it's not a mum over. Mum over is a problem in the animal, but it's a temporary suspension of the animal status, only because the kedusha is still there, just the mum is preventing you. Once the mum goes away, everything's fine. When the mizbeach is disqualified, the korban cannot be brought, period, during that period of time. You've lost all function, and it is balei chayim nidachim at that point in time, and you can't bring that korban even after the mizbeach is fixed. Their machloket probably revolves around is whether the kedusha that is placed on kodshei mizbeach, can that be suspended at any point? Rabbi Yochanan says it can't be suspended. So once something is kadosh, be kedushat mizbeach, that kedusha is permanently on the animal. And therefore, if you have a suspended period of time, you have a problem. If the mizbeach is nifgam, the problem is you have nitcheh and you can't bring the korban anymore. Rav, on the other hand, is suggesting that even kedushat mizbeach can be removed from the animal. For instance, the animal gets a mole. Then you can redeem the animal. Since there's a possibility of shifting that kedusha off the animal,
The Kedusha being on the animal doesn't create a scenario where it could be nidcheh. Even if it went into a state where it was disqualified, when it's requalified, that's fine, because Kedusha on the animal can't be shifted around. He agrees, once it's nishchat, then you can't transfer the Kedusha anymore. The Kedusha is on the animal is the korban, and then you can't shift it, therefore it's going to be nidcheh, and it's problematic. But while it's alive, since you could shift the Kedusha around, if it got a mum, that would also then allow you the capacity, if it's nidcheh, to requalify when the mizbeach is fixed. So that's machlok between Rabbi Yochanan and Rav. Meitave. Now we have a question on Rav. Kol hakodeshim shayu ad shelo nivneh mizbeach. All the kodeshim that were there until the mizbeach was built, this is in the time of Bayit Sheni, v'achar kach nivneh mizbeach, and then they built the mizbeach in Bayit Sheni, psulim. All kodeshim prior to the mizbeach being built are disqualified. That is a problem for Rav, because over here you didn't have a mizbeach built. So then any korban we're discussing here is a korban that's still alive, because you couldn't shech the korban because the mizbeach wasn't ready. Then the mizbeach is ready, and you shech the korban, and we say it's pasul, because it was kodesh before, it was nikdash, before the mizbeach was built. That's exactly like Rabbi Yochanan. They're makdish them, and a year before they go up to Bayit Sheni, or they're 5 minutes before they go up to Bayit Sheni, it says here that they're psulim. That sounds exactly like Rabbi Yochanan, that since they were kodesh, when there was no mizbeach available, they're nidcheh, and you can't utilize them. Mar says, nibneh, the mizbeach, duchuimi koraninu. That's not nireh v'nidcheh. There are different types of dichui. We discussed this actually earlier in the Masechta. We discussed this in Avodah Zarah as well. Which is that dichui can be what's called nireh v'nidcheh. It was once valid and qualified, and then it became disqualified. That's nireh. It was available and ready to be used. And then nidcheh, it was disqualified. So those are the cases we've been speaking about. You're makdish the animal, the mizbeach becomes nifgam. You shech the animal, and the mizbeach is nifgam. In that case, it was at one point ra'oi to be a korban. Now that the mizbeach is problematic, it no longer can be as a korban. That's nichoi, nireh v'nidcheh. Over here, when they were makdish the animals, at the time of the hekdesh, there was no mizbeach available. They were never nireh. So it's what's called dichoi mi'ikara. Dichoi mi'ikara means that from the outset, it was dichoi. Dichoi mi'ikara is not muskam. Not everybody agrees there's a concept of dichoi. It makes sense that nireh v'nidcheh, if something was once valid and then got disqualified, that should make it that it's a permanent disqualification. You can't re-qualify it. But something that was never qualified, why should it be nidcheh? It never reached a point where it was valid to say now that it's invalid and that should ruin it. So there, dichoi mi'ikara, many people believe, is not a problem of dichoi. And here, that's what the Gemara is suggesting. Here in the case where they were makdish korbanot, before Bayit Sheni, even Rabbi Yochanan would agree there that they shouldn't be psulim because they are dichoi mi'ikara. As if they are dichoi mi'ikara, that wouldn't be a problem. And even Rabbi Yochanan would agree to Rav. There's a massive Balei Tosafot here. Starts over here on this Amud, continues through the almost entire next Amud, discussing this point about dichoi mi'ikara, which is that we find in many places that Rabbi Yochanan believes that dichoi mi'ikara is dichoi. So then how can we reconcile between the Gemara here, who says that Rabbi Yochanan says dichoi mi'ikara is no problem, and the other Gemarot that say dichoi mi'ikara is a problem? So the Balei Tosafot here give a distinction that we've actually saw earlier in the Masechta that he gave back on Daf Yud Bet, which is Eish Lamar. The Hotam Ein Biyado L'Takein Mikrei Dichoi K'Nifrish B'Parakama. As I explained in the first parak, when it's out of your control, that means that you can't fix the situation, dichoi mi'ikara is problematic. V'hocha Biyado L'Takein HaMizbeach. Here, since you have the capacity to fix the Mizbeach, therefore, it's not called dichoi mi'ikara. Kach mashma lehocha dukuli ama lo avi dichoi. Over here, it's not. Midei dahava mechusar zman bigufo ubibalim. Same way that mechusar zman in a guf ubalim. It's also not called dichoi mi'ikara because it's a problem that will solve itself. Similar to a yoledet azav mitzora shifishu korbanam kodim zmanam, that they did it before they were actually obligated. Hachanami mafish korbanu lakiv the kishivne beit hamikdash. And therefore it's not considered to be nidcheh, and that's why even Rabbi Yochanan in this instance would agree. A situation where you can't rectify the situation, and that dichoi, even mi'ikara Rabbi Yochanan would say is problematic. Over here, where the dichoi could be fixed by you, you could fix the mizbeach. Therefore it's not called dichoi. So that's the basic distinction the Balei Tosafot make over here. Alright, so now the Gemara continues and tries to understand this braita. What's the problem in the braita? Why are they psulim? If everybody agrees dichoi mi'ikara is not a problem, then why does the Breita say that they are psulim? Ella Ajlo Neharasa Mizbeach. So the case is, before the Mizbeach was destroyed, that means in Bayit Rishon, before the Mizbeach was destroyed, people were makdish their korbanot. In that situation, they were nir'eh and nidcheh. Nir'eh because they were qualified while the Mizbeach was still around. After Churban HaBayit, those korbanot were nidcheh. Now we're at Bayit Sheni, and they want to bring those korbanot on the Mizbeach. That's a case of dichui. And it shows you that Rav is wrong, because here dichui applies even to animals that are alive. So Gemara says, Neras, the Mizbeach was destroyed. They got a little bit too old to be put on the Mizbeach. And that is, there's a minimum of 50 years between the time of the Churban HaBayit and the time that they put up the Mizbeach in the Bayit Sheni. And more likely along the lines of 70 years, depends when they got the Mizbeach up, before they got the Mikdash up. But there's a significant amount of time between when the animals were available at the end of Bayit Rishon and the beginning of Bayit Sheni. There's no way that those animals qualified to get on the Mizbeach. Zakein is one of the things that is a disqualifier of Korbanot. What is called Zakein is not clearly defined. Does Zakein mean just it's too old, it's weak, and therefore it's just apparent that it's old because of the weakness of the animal? Or does Zakein mean anything that graduates out of what the Torah calls animals that you bring as Korbanot, which are Ben Shana, Ben Shtei Shanim, or Ben Shalosh Shanim? Those are the three ages that we find in the Torah. So that means anything over 3 years would be called a Zakein. Either one of those would be the definition of Zakein, but clearly an animal that is 50 years old will qualify under both of those, be considered a Zakein. And therefore that can't be what we're speaking about here. The animal would be disqualified, not because of the Dichud, but because of its age. Ella, Ad Shelo Nifgama Mizbeach, Ve'achar Kach Nifgama Mizbeach. It's a case where they're Maktish the Korban, before there was damage done to the Mizbeach. And then the Mizbeach was damaged. Sulim, that is Pasul. That'd be very supportive of Rabbi Yochanan's contention. Here you have them being Maktish the animals. Then the Mizbeach became Pagum, and that would disqualify those animals, which means that Balei Chaim Nidachim, according to this. Where it says, V'lo Terutzei Kamitarts. Now you're asking a question on Rav from a Braita, which the wording in the Braita you just changed. You just changed everything about the meaning of the Braita, and now you're telling us it's a question on Rav. If you're already doing fancy footwork to reword the Braita to get it to make sense, then just fix it again so that it makes sense for Rav as well, which is Eimash Nishkatu. Just say these are a korbanot that were Nishkatu, and then the Mizbeach was Nifgam. And not that they were alive and it was Nifgam. If you're already fixing the Braita to make it make sense, make it make sense for Rav as well. So now, Amar Rav, Gidol Amar Rav, Mizbeach Shene'ekar. Here we're not speaking about the Mizbeach HaChitzon, here we're speaking about the Mizbeach HaPnimi, Mizbeach HaZav. Mizbeach HaZav that was taken out of place. Why it says Ne'ekar here is because Mizbeach HaZav is a kli. You just pick it up. It's not in its place anymore. Makdirim Ktoret Bimkomo. You'll have to be Makrib de Ktoret, even though the Mizbeach HaZav is not found there. The assumption of the Gemara is, the same way that the Mizbeach HaPnimi is Ne'ekar, and you could still be Makriv, you could still do things over there, same thing should be true with the Mizbeach HaChitzon. That even though the Mizbeach HaChitzon is there, not there, it would be fine to bring the Korbanot. And that would be a steer in Rav. Rav told us at the beginning of this sugya, Mizbeach Shenifgam, Kol HaKadoshim Shenishchatu Sham Psulim. Mizbeach that's Nifgam is problematic, and that it doesn't allow you to bring the Korbanot anymore. That would imply that the lack of Mizbeach disqualifies the Avoda. On the other hand, here it's saying, if the Mizbeach Zav is not there, just put the Torah on the floor, and you can do it where the Mizbeach Zav was. You don't need the Mizbeach Zav. One statement of Rav seems to indicate the Mizbeach is not essential. The other one seems to indicate that the Mizbeach is essential. The assumption being now that the Mizbeach Zav and the Mizbeach Kitzon function in the same way. Kadamarova, the answer is, Moda Rabbi Yehuda Bidamim. The Rabbi Yehuda agrees by the Dam. Hachanami Moda Rav Bidamim. What you have to say is that Rav said this solely about the Mizbeach HaZahav. When it comes to Damim, which means the Mizbeach HaChitzon, or Damim in the Mizbeach HaPnimi, means that the Chatot HaPnimiot, you can't do them without a Mizbeach HaZahav being there. And similarly, the Mizbeach HaChitzon, which involved Damim, you can't do that until there is a Mizbeach there, or a full Mizbeach that's there. So this is a unique din associated with the Ktoret and the Mizbeach Zahav. That's the answer of the Gemara. And that, according to some, explains why in Parshat Truma, which lists the Klei HaMishkan, two of the Kelim of the Mishkan are actually missing there. One is the Kiyor that is found in Parshat Kitisa. The other one is the Mizbech HaZahav, which is found at the end of Parshat Kitetzaveh. So now you could maybe understand why it left out the Mizbech HaZahav. The Mizbech HaZahav is not essential for the avoda that is done in the Mishkan, because you could bring the Ketoret even without a Mizbech HaZahav. That might actually be connected to what we're saying here. Like my S, my Rabbi Yehuda. My said, oh, just like Rabbi Yehuda says it doesn't apply to Damim, so too Rav says it doesn't apply to Damim. Where did Rabbi Yehuda say anything about Damim? The Tanya. Because we have a Braita, which is going to lead us into the next section of the Gemara, which is a pasuk that's found in Malachim Aleph, Perchet. This is in the consecration of the Mikdash, when Shlomo Melech is consecrating during the Chanukah of Bayit. It says, Vayomu Kidash HaMelech Etocha Chatzer Asher Lifnei Beit Hashem. He sanctified the entire Chatzer that was before the Beit Hashem. Kiyasah Hashem Et Ha'ula Ve'et HaMincha Ve'et Chalvei HaShlamim. That there he did the Ola, the Mincha, the Shlamim. Ki Mizbach HaNechoshet Asher Lifnei Hashem. Because the copper Mizbach that had been before Hashem, Katon Me'achil Et Ha'ula Ve'et Mincha Ve'et Chalvei HaShlamim, was too small to handle the volume of the Olot, the Menachot, and the Shlamim that were being brought. So that's one pasuk that he brings, which is that on that day, Shlomo HaMelech was mikadesh the floor of the Azara, Dvarim Kichtavam, Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says we take that pasuk very literally, which means that he was makdish the floor of the Chatzer to act as a Mizbeach on the day of the consecration. We saw earlier in the Masechta, there's nafkaminot in cases that had to do with the whole lacha from the Heichal out in the Mizbeach Chitzon. We said there, based on Rabbi Yehuda, who says that the entire Chatzer or Azara is qualified to be the Mizbeach, then as you step out of the Eichal, you're already done the Holacha that is absolutely necessary. There is the only point in time where you could have a Machshava. But after that, you can't have a Machshava because it's not necessary. But that relied on Rabbi Yehuda here, that said that Shlomo was Makdish, the entire Azara, to be like a Mizbeach on that day. And that's how he reads them. And so even though Rabbi Yehuda expands the expanse of what's classified as Mizbeach in terms of Haktara, he agrees with Gabe Damim that that can only go onto the actual Mizbeach. And so extending Kedusha, or the ability to work without the Mizbeach, is limited to Haktara. It does not include the Damim. And similarly, Rav will say the same thing, that with regards to the missing Mizbeach Zahav, that's good enough for the Ketoret. It's not good for Matan Damim. And the same thing will be true of the Mizbeach Nitzon, that the Matan Damim will have to be done on the Mizbeach, and absent the Mizbeach, it's a problem for the Korban. Amalei Rabbi Yossi, Alok Var Ne'emar. How can you take the Pasuk here literally, but it already says back in Perek Gimel, with regards to Shlomo HaMelech, says there, Vayelech Melech Givona, Mizbeach Sham, he went to Givon to do a Korban, Kihi Abama HaGidola. In that time, that was the Bama Gdola, no Givon. That's where the Bamot were until they built the Mikdash. Elef olot yaleh Shlomo al Mizbeach ahu. Shlomo brought 1,000 olot on that Mizbeach. And then, b'givon yirah Hashem el Shlomo b'cholom alayla. After that, Hashem appears to Shlomo Melech. B'yom elokim shalma iten lach. That's in the famous question, what can I give you? What is your wish, Shlomo Melech? And that's when he asked for chuchmah. So there, it says that he brought elef olot. V'ilu b'beit olomim hu omer. And by the beit olomim, which is in the pasuk that we said here, says by Yisbach Shlomo et Zebach Shlamim, Asher Zebach Lashem Bakar, Esrim Ushnaim Elef, 22,000. Truth is, the pasuk continues, and it says, V'chulei, V'tzon Me'av Esrim Alef. And then Tzon were 128,000. V'yachandchu et Beit Hashem HaMelech Kol B'nei Yisrael. That was with the consecration, or the Chanukat HaBayit, by Shlomo HaMelech. What Rav Yossi points out is, Kshetah Magia Lecheshbon Olot Uleminyan Amot, if you look at the quantity, the volume of alot that were brought that day, and the size of the Mizbeach, ze godo mizeh, then there's no problem. How could it be that you say the Mizbeach was too small? So that is based on a calculation and a number of assumptions. The first assumption is that the Mizbeach that was found in Giv'on, as well as the Mizbeach that is found in the Mikdash in the beginning, is the Mizbeach HaNechoshet of Moshe Rabbeinu. That Mizbeach Nechoshet Moshe Rabbeinu survives the destruction of Mishkan Shiloh, is then moved to Nov, after the destruction of Nov is moved to Gibeon, and then eventually is moved by Shlomo Melech up to Yerushalayim. The truth is that in the Psukim that are found here, I mean in Malachim it's hard. The Mizbeach that's mentioned in Perek Gimel in Malachim Aleph says a Mizbeach Asher Lifnei Hashem, doesn't tell you which Mizbeach it is. But if you look in Divrei Yamim, as Tosfos knows in Divrei Yamim Bet, Perek Aleph, Pasuk Hey, it says, Mizbach and Achoshet Asher Sab Bitzalel Ben Uri Ben Chur, Sam Lifnei Mishkan Hashem, Vaidusheu Shlomo Vakal, Vayal Shlomo Shem, Mizbach and Achoshet Lifnei Hashem, Asher Lo Moed, Vayal Av Olot Aleph, and then Hashem appears to him on that night. So that story in the beginning of Malachim Aleph, over here in Divrei Yamim, specifies that it was done on the Mizbach and Achoshet of Moshe Rabbeinu. And then again, when we reach the Pasuk in Perichet, the Melachim, that talks about a Mizbech Nechoshet, according to Rabbi Yossi, we're going to assume that it is also the Mizbech Nechoshet of Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, if you take the Mizbech Nechoshet of Moshe Rabbeinu, we know is that the Mizbech Nechoshet was 5 by 5 amot. 5 by 5 amot, as Rashi notes, is the Maracha, is the upper part of the Mizbech. So the Maracha is 5 by 5, that means the actual Mizbech itself is 9 by 9 amot. That's based on the fact that Rashi believes that there was an Amah Yisod and Amah Soveiv around the entirety of the Mizbeach HaNechoshet. That means that on every side is an extra 2 amot. So if the Maracha is 5 by 5, that means the total Mizbeach is 9 by 9. Mizbeach 9 by 9. First Amah is the Yisod, second Amah is the Soveiv. Then you get to the Maracha, it's 5 by 5. The first Amah is taken up by the Karnot that are on the edges there. That takes up 1 amah on each side, or 2 amot in each direction, means you're left 3 by 3. Then you have what's called makom hiluch hakohanim, the area where the kohanim have to walk around. That's another amah. Take up another amah each side. You're left with a maracha that is 1 by 1. So if I have a mizbeach nechoshet that is 1 by 1, on that mizbeach, Shlomo HaMelech put 1,000 olot. That's in Perek Gimel. Put 1,000 olot on a day on a mizbeach that was an amah by amah. Rashi notes that he needed some help with that. Because if it was just an amah by an amah, how could it consume such a quantity of korbanot? And that is, he says, esh yarad min hashamayim, that there was an esh that was coming down from shamayim, consuming the korbanot, so that accelerated the process, and that helped in putting 1,000 olot on a mizbeach, which is an amah by an amah. What Rabbi Yossi is pointing out is, the pasuk that Rabbi Yehuda quoted says the mizbeach was too small to handle the volume. Is that really true? The Mizbeach of Shlomo HaMelech, the Maracha of the Mizbeach of Shlomo HaMelech is 20 by 20. The actual Mizbeach itself, it's based on the Mizbeach of Shlomo in Midot, Per Gimel, Mishnah Aleph. Yossi explains that the Mizbeach of Shlomo, the Maracha was 20 by 20, or the entire Mizbeach was 28 by 28. And that is because you have an Amah Yisod, Amah Soveiv, that adds on 2 amot on each side. And so that gets you a 28 by 28. Then, when you get up to the top of the Mizbeach, which is 24 by 24, then you have to take off an Amah for the Karnot, and Amah for the Hiluch Raglei Kohanim. So that 24 by 24 turns into 20 by 20. So now, if you take an area, square area of 20 by 20, that's 400 square amot, versus the Mizbeach of Nechoshet, which had 1 square amah. That means the volume of Korbanot that you can do on a Mizbeach of Shlomo is 400 times the volume of that which was on the Mizbeach HaNechoshet. On the Mizbeach HaNechoshet, it said it did 1,000 olot. Shlomo did 1,000 on a single day. In the Mikdash, it said on that day they brought Bakar, Esrim Mishnaim Elef, and Tzomeh Esrim Aleph. So it turns out to be 142,000 korbanot that are brought on that day. That's only 142 times the volume. You have a platform that could do 400 times. How can you make a claim that the Mizbeach was too small? That's Rabbi Yossi's claim against Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says, oh, the Mizbeach was too small. They had to use the floor of the Chatzer because the Mizbeach was too small. Rabbi Yossi said, what do you mean it's too small? If on a ratio basis, Shlomo HaMelech could put on an Amah by an Amah 1,000 olot on a day, then on Maracha, 20 by 20, could easily clear 142,000 korbanot without any problem. If it's 142,000 versus 1,000, the ratio still works when you have a Mizbeach that's 400 times the size. So therefore, the relative ratio should have allowed it to happen. And therefore, Rabbi Yossi says, you can't say, Dvarim kichtabam. You can't say they literally were maktish the floor of the Azara, because it wasn't necessary. They did everything on the Mizbeah. Ma'u katan me'achil. Then what is he going to do to explain that pasuk in Perichet that said that the Mizbeah was too small to handle the load on that day? Ki adam omer l'chavero, ploni nanasu. Like when somebody says to his friend, he is a midget. He doesn't literally mean he's a midget. He hasn't changed his size at all. But he's been demoted. A person is demoted, he calls him a midget because, in a sense, his status has been diminished. And similarly over here, what does it mean? Katan me'achil. It is pasul d'avodah. And it is a lashon sagit nahor. Or what it was saying is that they were using the floor of the chatzer rather than the mizbeach of Shlomo, it said that they were retiring Moshe Rabbeinu's Mizbeach HaNechoshet. The Mizbeach HaNechoshet Moshe was no longer sufficient in size to handle the volume, and therefore they were retiring the Mizbeach HaNechoshet. And the Pasuk, it says, Beyomu Kidei Shemach Toch Chatzer Shalifnei Beit Hashem, Kesai Shem Et Ola, Kidei Shemach Toch Chatzer means the Mizbeach. The area of the Mizbeach was Shlomo HaMelech, that's what he was Kidesh, because it was a much larger area than the Mizbeach Nechoshet. So he extended the boundaries of the Mizbeach, and that's what it means he was Kidesh the Chatzer. Then he made it an area that was larger that could contain the Mizbeach. Because, Kimizbeach HaNechoshet Asher Lifnei Hashem Katon Me'achilat HaOlah. It was too small. The Mizbeach Nechoshet refers to the Mizbeach of Moshe Rabbeinu. That was too small to handle the volume of the Olah Mincha Bet Chalvei HaShlamim. It's a nice way of saying, they invalidated it, they retired it on that day. So that's how Rabbi Yossi reads the psukim. Rabbi Yehuda, Shapir Kama Rabbi Yossi. How does Rabbi Yehuda deal with this? Rabbi Yossi has a very good claim that the Mizbeach of Shlomo had the capacity to deal with the volume. Why would he have to be Makdish, the floor of the Azara? The answer is Rabbi Yehuda the Tamei. Rabbi Yehuda is the Shita To, Damar Mizbeach Shasa Moshe Gadolaya. He disagrees with the dimensions of the Mizbeach and the Choshet. The Tanya. The Braita tells us about the Pasuk in Shmot, Chamei Shemot Orech, Chamei Shemot Rochav. The Mizbeach and the Choshet is 5 by 5. Dvarim Kichtavam, Divrei Rabbi Yossi. That's what we saw before. Rabbi Yossi takes that very literally. It's a 5 by 5 top of the Mizbeach and the Choshet. Again, that makes the Mizbeach itself 9 by 9 according to Rashi. If you have the Ama Yisod Aman Soveiv, that makes it 9 by 9 wide. But 5 by 5 also makes it that the Maracha is only 1 by 1. So you have to take off an amah for the karnot, you have to take off an amah for the makom, hiluch raglei ha-kohanim, you're left with an amah by amah, maracha. That's how we got the ratio of 400 to 1. It was 20 by 20 in time of Shlomo, 1 by 1 in the time of Moshe. But that is Rabbi Yossi over here, who says, Darim Pichtavam. Rabbi Yehuda was the one who took Darim Pichtavam about Melachim Aleph. Now Rabbi Yossi is the one who says here, Darim Pichtavam. Rabbi Yehuda Amir, Ne'emar Kan Rabua. It says here that it has to be squared. Ne'emar Lahalan Rabua. It also says it has to be squared out in Yecheskel. Malalan emtziato, hayamodeit. Just like over there, it means from the center of the Mizbeach. Afkan emtziato, hayamodeit. So to over here, he measures from the middle. Behatam ilalan. Where do you know over there in Yecheskel that they're measuring from the middle of the Mizbeach? This is a pasuk that we quoted earlier in determining the size of the Mizbeach. It says here, va'ariel, the Mizbeach, shtemisrei amah l'chol ruach. Is 12 amot in every direction. Oh, enu el yudbet, el yudbet. Maybe it means it's 12 by 12. Shomer el arbat riva'av. In all four directions, lameh she'emsahu modeit. That the pasuk in Yechezkel is measuring from the center. From the center point in every direction, it is 12 amot. Rashi makes a very interesting comment over here. He says about this, the ribua of the mizbeach of Yechezkel, B'sher Yecheskel sh'nitna be'eh, Yecheskel had a nevoah al bayit sheni, about the bayit sheni, o al atid ravua el arbat rabav, or about the future, meaning bayit shlishi. Generally, we assume that the nevoah of Yecheskel is speaking about bayit shlishi, not bayit sheni. Rashi over here, in order to explain this, has to say that it meant not only bayit shlishi, it even means bayit sheni. And that influenced the Olei Gola as to what size they made their Mizbeach. Over here it says it's 12 in every direction. That means the Maracha is 24 by 24, and that is the size of the Maracha in Bayit Sheni, which is the Mizbeach that we've been discussing until now, which was 32 by 32. But what you see from here is that when it gives you a measurement, it's not giving you the measurement of the entirety of the width and the length of the Mizbeach. It's giving you the measurement from the center of the Mizbeach. And so what Rabbi Yehuda says, if you do the same thing by the Mizbeach and the Choshet, take 5 and 5, it means it's 5 from the center. That means that the total is really 10 by 10. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, the Mizbeach Nechoshet, based on using a yachas, a ratio from that of the Yechezkel, which says that we're talking about the center line, over here would be 10 by 10 amot. Now 10 by 10 amot really turns out to be 14 by 14, because of the fact that you have to add on an Amah Yisod and an Amah Soveiv. So I give it 14 by 14. The top, the maracha, the mizbeach, is 10 by 10. You lose an amah for the karnot, an amah for the makom raglei ha-kohanim. That drops it down to being 6 by 6. 6 by 6 amot, that is 36 square amot. Now, if you compare that to the mizbeach of Shlomo, which is 400 square amot, it's about 11.11 times bigger. So it's about a scale of about 11 bigger than the Mizbeach Nechoshet Moshe Rabbeinu. That doesn't work. If you put 1,000 olot on the Mizbeach Nechoshet, 11.1 times, that means that you're going to be putting on 11,100 on the Mizbeach of Shlomo. But we saw in the Pasuk, you put on 22,000 plus additional 120,000, 142,000 korbanot. So that is why the scale didn't work. And that's why Rabbi Yehuda said the Mizbeach was too small to handle the volume. Because between Mizbeach Nechoshet and Mizbeach Shlomo, that scaling up would only given you capacity to do 11,100. It wouldn't have given you the capacity to do 142,000 korbanot. And for that reason, he says that it was too small, and that's why he was makdish the floor of the Azara. Rabbi Yossi, Kigamar Gzera Shaba, Rabbi Yossi also subscribes to the Gzera Shaba of Rabua, Begof Ohu de Gamir. He does it based on the height. He tells the height of the Mizbeach and the Choshet. Titania, the Pasuk says about the height of the Mizbeach and the Choshet, Shlosh Amot Komato. That it was 3 Amot high, the Mizbeach, which sounds very small in terms of Mizbeach and the Choshet. Dvarim Tichtavam Tibi Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda takes that very literally. So Rabbi Yehuda, the Mizbeach and the Choshet was extremely flat, meaning that it was only 3 Amot high, but it was very wide. It was 14 by 14 amot in totality. 10 by 10 is the maracha. 14 by 14, including the yesod and the soveiv. So he has a mizbeach, 3 amot high, with 14 by 14. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Nemerkan Ravua, the Nemerlalan Ravua, it says here that it has to be square, and also says by the mizbeach zav, Ravua. It also says that it has to be squared out by the mizbeach zav. Malalan govo pishnaim kiroko. The mizbeach zav is 1 amah by 1 amah by 2 amot high. So the height of the Mizbeach Zav is 2 times the length or the width of the Mizbeach Zav. Afkan, so over here, Pishnayim Kiroko. Similarly over here, if the Mizbeach Nechoshet, which according to Rabbi Yossi is 5 by 5, then the height should be 2 times the length or the width, which make it 10 amot high. So according to Rabbi Yossi, the Mizbeach Nechoshet is tall and narrow. It's 5 by 5, 10 amot high. What are you going to do with the fact that it says 3 amot high? That is the height of the Mizbeach Choshet from the Soveiv and upwards. The Soveiv sits 6 amot off the ground. 5 amot is the halfway point of the Mizbeach. 6 amot is where the Soveiv is. 3 amot higher is where the Maracha is. That gets you to 9. The Karnot give the extra 10th amah. But the flat part of the Maracha is 3 amot above the Soveiv. And that's what it means. The Mizbeach Choshet was 3 amot high. It was 3 amot from the Soveiv, above the level of the Soveiv. So that way, you can see here, on the last page of the handout that I give, you can see there the difference in opinion between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says that the Mizbeach is Maracha, that is 6 by 6, and that is 10 amot by 10 amot on the top, 14 amot, 14 amot in total, but 3 amot high in totality. Whereas, Rabbi Yossi believes it's 10 amot high, with a top that is 5 by 5, and that narrows down to Maracha of 1 by 1. Then, Rabbi Yehuda now challenges Rabbi Yossi and says, Amar le Rabbi Yehuda, Efshar Kohen Omed Agave Mizbeach, Huvuda B'Yodo, is it possible that the Kohen is working on the Mizbeach Nechoshet, he's got the Avodah in his hands, Kol Am Ro'im Oto Mibachutz, and everybody's staring at him, watching him do the Avodah? Is that possible? Because the Kalei HaChatzer, which are the woven walls that surround the Chatzer, were only 5 amot high. So for the Mishkan itself, the Mishkan, which had housed the Kodesh and the Kodesh of Kodeshim, you had the Kodeshim that were 10 amot high. So the height of the Mishkan, which is really the Ol Moed, or the Kodesh and the Kodesh of Kodeshim, that was 10 amot high. The Kalei HaChatzer, which surrounded the Chatzer outside of that, where it had the Mizbeach Kitzon in it, the Kior in it, that area was surrounded at 50 by 100, and it had these woven walls that were 5 amot high. So the truth is, you could see the Mishkan. The inner part of the Mishkan, which was the Kodeshim, you could see from outside, because that was 10 amot high. Kalei HaTzer are 5 amot high. Now, what Rabbi Yehuda is pointing out to Rabbi Yossi is, if the Mizbeach is 10 amot high, that means when the Kohen ascends the ramp to go up to the Mizbeach Nechoshet, when he gets to the top of the Mizbeach Nechoshet, 10 amot high, he's at the same level as the Mishkan. That means anybody outside of the Mishkan can look in, the Mishkan or the Kalei HaTzer can look in and watch him doing the Avodah, which would be inappropriate or not Tzanua. And so he says, how can you tell me the Mizbeach Nechoshet is 10 amot high? At least I say it's 3 amot high, so it's below the level of the Kalei HaChatzer, and so that's why it's Sanua. Amar lo Rabbi Yossi, lo kfar ne'amar, et Kalei HaChatzer, et Masach, Shar HaChatzer, asher ala Mishkan, v'ala Mizbeach. that's on the Mishkan and Mizbeach. Ma Mishkan Yuramot, Af Mizbeach Yuramot. Just like the Mishkan is 10 amot high, so is the Mizbeach Yuramot high. Now Rashi says that that limud teaches you, just like the Mishkan, which has Krashim that are 10 amot high, so too the Mizbeach is quote-unquote 10 amot high, but Rashi means that not the Mizbeach itself is 10 amot high, but the Kalei HaChatzer, or the things that surround it, also have to be 10 amot high. Just like the Mishkan has Krashim that are 10 amot high surrounding it, so too the Mizbeach has to have Kalei HaChatzer that surround it that are 10 amot high. That's one way to read it. Whereas Tosva takes the Gzer Shava much more literally, which is Et HaMishkan, it's Yudamot, so to the Mizbeach is Yudamot. And because of that, he says, Tema, they've given Eka Hekesha, Gzereshav Derabua, Lomali. Once you know the Hekesh between the Mishkan and the Mizbeach, that should be 10 amot high, why do you need the Gzereshav Derabua to teach you the height on the Mizbeach and the Choshet? The Baal does well leave it unanswered, but if you look at Ot Lamed Vav of the Shinim Kubetzet, he answers, Yesh Lamar, Dilav Gzereshav, had it not been for the Gzereshav, Lomit Darshina and Hekesha, the store mashmaut of pasuk. Shagadu be'ed yugim alamot kumato. If not for the gzer shava, we wouldn't have taken that hekesh and assumed it meant 10 amot to undermine the literal translation of the pasuk, which is 3 amot. Inami. Ha hekesha lava gova de mizbeach koi. Or the other possibility is that it's not about the height of the mizbeach, la gova de klaim ke de perisha kuntres. Speaking about the height of the klaim, and that was the alternative view that we saw in Rashi, that here, that the Mishkan Yuramot is not speaking about the Mizbeach itself, it's speaking about the Kalei HaChatzer that surround the Mizbeach, that they should be Yuramot. The Omer, and the Pasuk says, Klaim Chamesh Esrei Ama Al HaKotef. Rashi says, they're quoting the Pasuk about the Kalei HaChatzer. It says that they are 15 Amot high. That's not what the Pasuk says. And Tosafot spends a lot of time showing that's the case, but that the Pasuk is telling you that at the front, on the eastern side of the Chatzer, the Kalei HaChatzer, 15 Amot, was the way that they covered the front. Their back of the Chatzer was 50 Amot. It was straight across 50 Amot. In the front of the Chatzer, there was 15 Amot wing on one side, 15 Amot wing on the other side, and then a 20 Amot piece in the middle. So that, depending on how you read that, that created the opening to enter into the area of the Chatzer. But either way, with the 15 Amot, it's not about the height of the Kalei HaChatzer. It's about the width of the Kalei HaChatzer on the wings on the eastern side. They were 50 amot each. That's the description. Rashi says, the Pasuk says, Kaleim Chaymesh Yisrei Ama El HaKatef. They're learning from that it must be 15 amot high. Umat al malomer heyamot misfat heyamot. Then why does the Torah tell us that the Kalei HaChatzer, 5 amot high, misfat ha-mizbeach ulemalo? That's from the edge of the mizbeach and upwards. It means that the Kalei HaChatzer were 10 amot. But then you had 5 amot, well, the 5 additional 5 amot got you up to 15 amot, and that's what he got, because the 10 amot came from the Mizbeach, from the Mishkan, they add on 5 amot on top of that, and that's what gets you the 15 amot in total. Umat amalomar shlosh amot komato, and then according to Rabbi Yossi, what does it mean that the Mizbeach Nechosh is 3 high? Mizbat Soveiv ulamalo. That's from the Soveiv and upwards, as we described before, is 3 amot. That's the reading of Rashi. The Baal Tosafot say the Pasuk never says that it's 15 amot high, but rather, this is a statement of the Gemara. And the Baal Tosafot say in the end, V'hocha b'shmaitin garsinan ma mishkan yudamot, av mizbeach yudamot. Klayim, tet vav, klayim are 15, lo garsinan nami elakatef. They leave out the remainder of the pasuk, because they're not quoting a pasuk. Telav kramaiti. It's not bringing a pasuk, but rather, it is a quote that Rabbi Yossi is saying, mistoma. If the mizbeach is 10 amot high, and I have a proof from that from the hekesh and the pasuk, then the Kalei HaChatzer must have been 15 amot high. And then, hey amot, misfat ha'amad. That's what he brings afterwards is then, what is the 5 amot high that is mentioned? The pasuk means 5 amot above the level of the Mizbeach. And Tosva brings a raya to that from the fact that B'rayt at Malachat HaMishkan lo kazina klal klayim tevav b'milta de Rabbi Yossi. It's totally absent over there. They don't quote it as a pasuk, but rather they quote it as a statement of the Gemara. Klayim ha'chamesh esrei amah. Then the Gemara says, well, then what do I do with the pasuk in the Torah that says the klaim are 5 amot high? That's the answer. They're 5 amot above the height of the Mizbeach. So Tosfot does that in order to avoid the problem of reading this as a pasuk that doesn't say what the Gemara seems to indicate according to Rashi. Rabbi Yehuda ki gamar gzereshova birachvo de gamir. And Rabbi Yehuda, when he learns the gzereshova, that has to do with the length and width. Ola Rabbi Yehuda, ha kamitchaze kohen, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, which the question that he challenged Rabbi Yossi with, is that the Kohen is visible if the Mizbeach is 10 amot high. Rabbi Yossi solved that problem by saying the Kaleah Chatzer are 15 amot high. So Rabbi says, Nei the Kohen mitchaz. So too for Rabbi Yehuda, it's the same problem. He thinks the Kaleah Chatzer are 5 amot off the ground. The Mizbeach is 3 amot, literally, off the ground. But the Kohen, who's also 3 amot tall, according to Rashi, maybe according to Bali Tosfot, is 4 amot tall. Nevertheless, that's at least a minimum of 6 amot. The Mizbeach's 3, plus the Kohen is 3, that's 6. If he's 4, that's 7 amot above. And the Kaleah Chatzer stopped at 5 amot. So even according to Rabbi Yehuda, the Kohen is visible from the outside. He, the Kohen, mitchazeh avodah, to be a dolo, mitchazeh. You can see the Kohen's head. You can see the Kohen's upper body. What you can't see is the avodah that he's doing. The avodah he's doing is below the 5 amot of the Kaleah Chatzer. And therefore the Kohen, even though his height exceeds the Kaleah Chatzer when he's standing on the Mizbeach on the Choloshet, that still will not expose the avodah. And that's the issue. We're not worried about the tzniut of Kohen, we're worried about the tzniut of the avodah. As long as the avodah is below the 5 amot, because he's working with his hands, he's working where his feet are, that's all done below the 5 amot of the Kaleah Chatzer. And for that reason, it's not a problem of tzniut, even though the Kaleah Chatzer are only 5 amot high. Okay, we're going to stop here. 6 lines down on the top of Samach Amud Aleph.